Yes.
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 Hold
Oh, there it is.
Let me take my sticker off my
Oh, he
helmet.
just bought it. Just
Sun
bought it.
looks 12.
That's great. I didn't know if that was the trend was coming back, leaving the price tag
No.
stickers back on the hats.
No, it was a gift. This was gifted to me by my boy Chad.
Word.
So, what's the word, brother?
Chilling. I just want to, we'll start it off here. I just want to welcome everybody for tuning in to the Leeds Edutainment Podcast. We've got a very special guest with us today, Mr. Checkmark of the legendary Boston, well, Cambridge Boston group, Schizophrenics. How are
Thank you,
you, my
brother.
friend?
All's well, my man. How are you?
Yeah, good,
It's
good,
good
man.
seeing you. I'm glad you got the memo on the matching outfit, me and you.
Yep. You got
Yeah.
the Carhartt tee on? Is that what it is?
No,
No, just regular tee.
this one's different. This it's
Okay.
it's a V-neck.
Okay,
If we're
cool.
talking brands, I think it's Perry Ellis, but
Oh yeah. Well, that makes more sense. You were a
to
little
leave him
higher up
very
on that.
jealous. No, yeah,
Yes.
right.
But word, man. Yeah, I wanted to bring you on here because we were talking about the DMX show at the Middle East, and I know you just have a long history of dating back to like growing up next to the Middle East. You're
Yeah.
from Cambridge, Massachusetts. You grew up in Central Square,
In the square,
in the square,
on
in
Mass
the
Ave, during the crack era, when the Middle East was a bowling alley.
So let's talk
There's
about that.
a little gem already for the people that don't know. So yeah, the Middle East used to, where we performed, that same stage that we performed a million times on was a bowling alley, rickety. It was terrible too. Like you weren't go you were going down there just to try to like either take the kids out or on a date try to get laid. Like you weren't going there to really bowl because it was so warped and the lanes were like it was terrible. But
Right.
yeah,
So you grew up, and you grew up in the square. What was the
yes,
street? What was the street?
on Mass Ave,
Oh, you
Mass
oh, literally you
Massachusetts Avenue,
oh
yeah. 434. What's the address at Middle
four
East?
480, 472.
Yeah, 434. We were literally like only thing in between my apartment building in the Middle East was a corner store, the Bradford Cafe, Mary Chung's Chinese food, and then the Middle East. And all yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's all good. My fault. We're still learning how to do this, we being me. But yeah, I mean, Joseph, the owner from when I was a little kid, used to feed us chicken sandwiches when my mom was at work. Like he used to give us these wraps. Like I could go for one now, honestly. Like he's
The
like
chicken
he's
shawarma wrap? The chicken
yeah,
shawarma
I guess that's what it is,
wrap?
dude. It's funny you say that because like I know like shawarma was popping now, but he was giving those to us when we was kids. And when I mean giving, like I mean I would be hanging out like in the square and walk up and hey, you eat yet? Like, throw me something to eat because my mother worked. My sister's in here too. But yeah, our mom worked a lot of hours because she was a single mom and she was young. And Joseph looked out like a lot. So when you were doing shows before I knew you, actually, I don't know. I think I might have met you before you were doing the shows there, but maybe not then. But
No,
when you were doing shows before I met you, I was sneaking in your own joints through Joseph.
it's
For what
fine.
that's worth. So I might owe you a couple dollars for a
No,
couple of
you
tickets.
ain't the only one. I want to talk back, go back there. Your mother was 16 when she had you, correct? Wow. So that must have been a lot. And you said you had siblings too?
Yeah, I have two younger sisters. So my mom was 16. She was 15 when she got pregnant. It was her first time. My father was 21 and he was married. I've recently found out this part that my father was already married.
Damn.
And so that's why now I kind of understand why he boogied, because I still to this day haven't met him. But I found him. My aunt found him on the internet. And I've interacted with him. I talked to him on the phone, but he's cool. He's all right. But yeah, so my mom ended up getting her GED when she was like 28, because I was actually born in Lynn, and my mom got her GED when she was 27, 28, I believe, and somehow randomly got offered a job to work at MIT. like not as a professor or anything, but she worked in the operations center. It was cool. So I got dropped in the middle of the square at 14 years old with, at that point, a 30-year-old mother. And at that point, my mom had two kids, and she was trying to figure her life out, and I had to figure mine out, like literally in the square, looking way older than I was. When I was 14, I looked like 17, 18. I was buying liquor when I was like 15. So, like, I looked way older. So I got treated like as an older person, but I was still a young boy with, no male elders and nobody really to look out for me. So when I was tested, I had to either show up or run, and sometimes I did both. But the one thing about that era was you had to either you had to you had if you didn't have it, you had to look the part. So I was always good at that. So I started working at 14 years old. I had three jobs freshman year, played sports, and still like worked, and all my money went to jewelry. So I looked real cool. And as crazy as it sounds, that backdrop, like in a strange way, like I don't know, I just grew up way too fast, and I wanted in on all of it, and that shit turned me out. Like I wanted in, bro. Like I was literally in the square. I'd have to walk through the square to get a slice at Hi-Fi, to do anything. The grocery store we used was Purity Supreme, which is up across the street from where Manhattan used to be. I don't know what's there now, but like, to go grocery shopping, I had to walk through the square. And when I say people don't really know unless you was around, dude, Central Square or any place during the crack era was just insane. Between the zombies and the hustlers, like it was nuts. Like regular people were not like really welcome in areas that were busy, As a when I got older and I got into it a little bit, dude, we knew we there was there used to be a my son's running over here. There's a payphone in front of what used to be Radio Shack, which is across the street from the Middle East, that to this day I still remember the number. It was 491-1946. And we used to get incoming calls right there. You say hi.
Hi.
Check marks.
Yes, that's
Son,
Sonny.
what is your son's name
That's
again?
my
I'm
little
sorry.
boy. His name is
What's his name?
Christopher, but he goes by
Christopher.
Sonny. And
Sonny.
his hair looks crazy because we're not cutting it until he's five. So
Wow.
it's gonna be fun for a little while. And there's
Wow.
no significance to that. We just decided that, whatever. But yeah, so it was crazy being in that environment,
Yeah.
because I mean, I guess you could be like a like if you was a square, like a super square, it wouldn't matter because you wouldn't even notice it. You'd just be walking by and think everybody's a troublemaker.
Right.
But if you're somebody that at the time I was, this is also we're talking mid 80s where hip hop was really starting to like become that thing, and I wanted in on that too. So it was like it went hand in hand. Like
Yeah.
people tell stories about, or you always hear about the beatboxes and stuff. Like dudes would be outside with the beatbox playing. Dude, that shit was right there in the square. Like I'll never forget, I first heard oh fuck, oh what the hell is the name of it, the Public Enemy song with the whistle, and it was just so fire.
Oh yeah. Oh
I forget
man.
what it was, but that shit, I wanted to say
Is that
Black Sheep.
Rebel? Is that Rebel
Yeah,
Without a
Rebel
Pause?
Without a Pause.
Yeah.
Dude, hearing Rebel Without a Pause through a fucking beatbox in like in front of McDonald's, like for the first time was insane. Or like Paid in Full, like hearing Paid in Full, the song.
Yeah.
Dude, like, and these dudes was just out there and they was getting money and they looked cool, and they had the music, and Skippy White's was right there. They was getting the tapes right away.
Where was Skippy
And
White's?
Skippy's was, well, it was two different places. It was where Cheapo Records is now. That was the second time. Prior to that, it was in between Blockbuster, which was on the corner in Manhattan, So it was Blockbuster. Well, that used to be Coquettes, but yeah, it was right there.
Yep.
It was right in that one little area right there. So everybody had the tape. Skippy made sure everybody was straight. Like everything new that came out, all you had to do is skip what's new. And I was one of the dudes. I bought everything. Like I bought every tape that came out. Like I everything. The Two Live Crew with the dude with the broken arm on the tape, and I didn't even know who they were. MC Shy D, like shit. Even the dudes, the dudes from Boston that John P. and
Top Choice,
dude. I had the Top Choice cassette. Shit, I had the Wu-Tang. I had the Wu-Tang Protect Your Neck like demo tape from Skippy. Like Skippy had everything.
Nice.
And so the dudes would be playing that like right out in the square, and with you know, Sherlins on or 8-Balls, like the real 8-Ball jackets, not like the shitty bootleg ones that are followed up and get money. And I just wanted in, bro. I didn't want to feel intimidated. So I kind of like wanted to find my role and find my spot, which I did later on, which wasn't probably the best thing that ever happened in my life. But yeah.
You get a product of your environment, right?
Dude, 1,000%. And the older I get, the more I realize it. That shit turned me out, bro. Like I hustled from that point almost on. Now I'm to the point where I'm chill because I've ran into a bunch of shit, which we can talk about too if you want. But
yeah, we'll get to that.
It helped me like develop my swag when it came to my music, because I always I started like my first couple songs like I wrote when I was like 14. It was like 86 87, and like that whole mentality developed my swag that made me kind of a little bit different than a lot of other rappers that weren't really doing what they were saying they were doing. And it wasn't until I got in a lot of trouble as an adult that it was kind of like, fuck, like this shit really set me back. Like I was a straight A student and I sold, yes, my lawyer's on here. He just said, don't get into that other shit.
That's a good point. We won't go into just stop
it. The shit that's over is over. Yeah. It's behind us now.
We'll talk about whatever you feel comfortable talking
that
about.
That is so funny, dude.
That's awesome. That's a first.
I just happened to look right down.
The lawyer chimes in.
Yeah, I wouldn't look at the comments because I'm such a big mouth and talking. That's so funny. Yes.
Yeah. You got a lot of dudes in here checking in with you. You got a lot of people.
Yeah.
Your reception's a little fuzzy. Are you okay on your end?
I don't know. Maybe somebody chimed into my Wi-Fi or something. If it's bad, let me know if I should.
Well, the volume seems fine. You got a little blurry for a second. I'll let you know if things change.
Yeah, let me know. So I can move. I'm just out back because we're actually doing a huge renovation in my house right now.
Oh, okay.
Like insane. Like if I was to turn the camera, it's gonna be sick. But
word.
Four weeks in.
Word.
So I'm happy to be outside.
Yeah, it's funny because you talk about the 80s in Central Square, and Joseph used to always say at the Middle East, he's like, the 80s in Central Square is all about the hookers and the crack.
Pretty much.
He's like, he was actually quoted in the paper saying that.
Dude, there was literally hookers. People don't understand that, but there was literally hookers walking with the red high heels out front of my building when I was a little kid. And it was like, and I was stepping over crackheads that were sleeping on my floor in my building, like as a kid. Like the shit was nuts, bro.
Yeah.
Because I literally
growing up as a kid in that, you know, that's
As a little boy that had no father, that had a 16-year-old, dude, people thought that my mom was my sister. Like when he was out. Joseph probably thought my mom was my sister at first, until she went to work and I was hanging out in front of his spot.
Yeah. So when did you start taking the rapping serious? How old were you?
So I used to rap in my bedroom. We did all that stuff. Shit, I saw KT in here.
Early. Oh shit! I'm not shout out KT.
Me and Killer Tactics used to freestyle in detention because we both were so busy being cool that we would end up in detention all the time. So yeah. We freestyled in school all the time. We used to dance. It was always just to kind of be cool. But I ended up linking up with somebody that introduced me to Human Beatbox from the Fat Boys. Rest in peace.
Yeah.
Buff Love. And Buff loved my style and what I was doing. And we put a group together and he got assigned to a demo deal to Warner Brothers. So I was like signed to a label at 18. And then that label turned out to be like really corny what they wanted to do with us, because they wanted to make us like New Kids on the Block, where we wanted to be like BBD.
When you say us, are you talking about this point Schizophrenics, or you talk about you and KT?
No, me and Bones, rest in peace. Yeah. And our other partner. So I had my best friend at the time. I was at his house once, and his little brother was singing in the shower. I was walking by, and the dude was singing. He was singing "Let's Chill" by Guy, and I'm like, "Yo!" And this is a little Portuguese kid. He was 14 at the time. Had a crazy voice, and I'm like, "Yo, who the fuck is singing in your bathroom?" And he's like, "That's Matthew." I'm like, "Yeah, right." So when I got put on a conference call with Buff, and he wanted us to perform like on the phone for some people that were there, and little Matthew, 14 years old, Bones was 16, I was 18, I was like the elder of the group or whatever, and Matthew sang "Let's Chill," and they were like, "Yo, we need this. Like, we need this." Three white dudes from Boston with swag, and one of them can sing his ass off. All I could do was rap and choreograph the dances and, you know, put the clothes together for us. But so we got signed to Warner Brothers to a demo deal. They flew us out back and forth to New York a bunch of times. They had us recording at Quad Studio before Tupac got shot in the same fucking studio. Like, they had Larry Blackman from Cameo. They had him A&R our project. And when he did it, he was, he kept trying to put his sound on it. Like, cause I don't know if that's something that A&Rs do, but he was getting in on the hooks, and he was, and like putting his voice on shit. Like, it had like the Cameo shit in the background. And we were like, no, we wanted to be raw. So, the way the demo deal works is they pay for you to record a demo for them. And if then they offer you a deal at the end if they want to. So they offered us a deal, and we had the option to tell them to fuck off and keep our master. So we did that. And then Buff got us a deal at Atlantic from there. And then Buff died a couple years later. So after Buff died, he was our manager. We were signed to a management and production deal with him. After he died, and I was just so turned off by the music industry that I was like, fuck this. I was like, I hate it. You know, so I never even wanted, like, at that point, I never wanted to sell music. Even to this day, I don't like selling music. Which is clear by, you know, what a great push I did on my last project, my most recent project, I should say. I make music for the people that can enjoy it. If you find it, you find it. If you don't, then whatever. Yeah. But I know I'm nice, and everybody knows I'm nice, you know? So that's like never been an issue. So 1996, 97 comes around, and I bump into Esoteric. And he was actually at my house. I think I was cutting his hair or something. And he starts telling me about all the stuff that he got going on with Brick Records. And he's like, yeah, they got that shit over here. It's in the stores. It's this and it's that. And I'm like, what? I'm like, because at that point, even getting your stuff on the radio was a big deal. And I was like, yep. I'm like, that sounds dope. I was like, you know, I figured I'd tell him I'm nicer than him, so they should probably hook me up, you know?
Right.
And he set me up with Truth and Papa D, and they just, I don't know. I don't even know how that whole shit went.
So let me ask you this.
I finally said, fuck it. Like, I'll fucking put a record out, you know?
So I just want to back.
Years,
go ahead.
Sorry.
You fish. You go ahead.
Yeah, I went all over the place with that.
All right. So I want to just backtrack a little bit. Eddie Bones and you are schizophrenics, correct? correct?
Yes.
Was that the name of the group when you were with Buffy trying to push it?
No, we were known as Boss Boys. That was the name of the group.
And how did you and Bones link up? How did that happen?
So we had this story, and it's funny when I hear other people, like when I see other people living it, right?
Yep.
I was 2 years older than him, so I was a junior in high school when he came in as a freshman, right?
Okay.
And he had the same shit that I had, the same issue that I had. No father,
yep.
Tall, facial hair, swag, and I saw a younger version of me. And instead of embracing it, this is what I say. This is what I mean when I say that people, I see people make this mistake and kind of in life a lot. I saw somebody that made me think about me a lot, and it made me not like him. So I used to like really, I gave him a real hard time in high school. Like I used to throw shit at him when he was talking to girls and shit. Like I hated on him bad. And then somewhere along the line, like maybe his sophomore year, but I like when I tell you I really busted his ball. it wasn't nice.
And yeah.
I wish he was here to like to be able to say how it felt, because it wasn't cool, you know. But especially as much shit as he talked. Oh man, that's crazy. But yeah, I used to bust his balls real hard. And then one time I think we ended up at the same club, because we used to go to Faces. Yep. It was like an under 21 dance club, and we used to all go there. Me and KT would go there, Bones would go with a couple of his boys, and the thing was to show out, you know, and have your little routines and then hopefully get girls off it. So one time he was doing his thing and I saw him dancing, and I was like, oh shit, this dude's nice, you know, he's cool. And somehow somebody introduced us and we spoke, and I apologized to him for like riding him so hard, no homo. And we became like besties out of nowhere. And, you know, he had that same energy that I had. It was just that he was younger than me, and I didn't really, you know, it's just, I don't know. It's weird. It's weird looking back, but.
It's probably the love for hip hop too, I'm imagining, kept you guys. That was really the glue, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And we also had a huge thing in common, not having a father and not having like me busting his balls. There was nobody to like protect him from it. I mean, I would never like put hands on him or nothing, but like me busting his balls, there was nobody to protect him, the same way that when people fucked with me when I was little, you know, it was the same thing, you know?
Right.
So we had that in common, and that's a strong thing to have in common, you know? Yeah. So over time, whatever, he decided, because I was already, like, I was heavy into freestyle rapping back then and doing, yes, my sister just said he was doing the airbrushed denim suits. But yeah, so he was he was very, very artistic, and he used to, like, he used to hook our clothes up. He would draw on our clothes and shit. Like, it was just dope. Like, my boy. Like, and then in the same way. So both of my sisters are in here right now, Jill and Jess. And Bones used to be at our house all the time. Like, we used to rehearse in the house. Bones is both of their big brother, you know. And we went to I want to say Wurlitzer or something, or Guitar Center. And first, we would rent a four track, and we would rent like a little beat machine, and he would put some beats together, and we would record stuff in the house, and it was cool, and it was dope, it was fire, and that actually predates the conversation with Esso, when he was just telling me like, yo, why are you fucking doing this and not putting it out, you know? But we used to record in my house, and we would record in his house. My baby sister Jillian was. She was born in 89. She was listening to us freestyle and watching us record and wanting trying to physically grab the mic when she couldn't even say words. Like she would rap with us and just like, and she was the original mumble rapper, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just Jill was the original mumble rapper.
Huh?
I don't even think you even hear what I'm saying.
No, my dog was barking. It was distracting me. So hold on one second. My apologies. I don't want to pick up the volume. You know,
it's all good.
hold on.
My baby sister used to watch us, and she used to try to emulate us. And she had the rhythm, and she had like the style, and she had the flow. I still got some tapes of her rapping over like early Gangsta beats, but she didn't even say the words, which is pretty fire. I gotta find it. But yeah,
let's fast forward to 97 now. Do you like after SO tells you what's going on with this upcoming? What we're about to talk about is the Boston independent scene boom that's about to hit. Do you and Bones link up and like let's do this? Let's call the group Schizophrenics. Like, what was the whole meaning behind calling?
So we had this thing where it was actually four of us. So it was Bones. Bones would make the beats, and then there was two other cats, my boys, still my boys to this day. My man Andrew, who used to go by Capital A, and my man Josh that went by Point Blank, and they were both from Cambridge as well. And somehow, I don't even know how we all linked up, but those two were fire. They were fire. So there's so much music that I have that I've since like digitized and mastered that I want to release, and maybe someday you could help with that too.
But
excuse me, we used to see. Look at my sister just said it. We had ciphers.
We gotta get your sister. We get sister on us,
right? But so we used to record, and we used to rap, and we used to freestyle, and we used to battle people like before, like the current, like the goofy battles that they have now, which is still cool, you know. But like getting out and rapping where you could get punched in the face after was a different type of battle, you know. Like, not the whole rapping with no beat and, you know, yell at each other and say shit that ain't even real. Like we used to really.
Plus, it was freestyling back then, too, right? It wasn't written ahead of time, right?
Yeah.
That's the challenge of it, you know?
Right. So we were Schizophrenics. Yep. I forget how we even came up with the name, but we each had our own different thing. I know my brother Tyler said earlier on your thing, he said the Schizophrenic Menace. That was me. Like, that was my alter ego. I had like two different names. It was G-Man and Checkmark, because G-Man was my first rap name, and then Checkmark. But so, I mean, we had our own thing, and we were happy with, we wanted to be Playground Legends. That's what we started out as. It wasn't until the Brick Records thing that me and Bones were ready. We were serious. The other two kind of were still cool with, you know, just, you know, being Playground Legends. We wanted to, my first time hearing my song on the radio, that was it for me. I was like, dude, this is what I want to hear. I want to hear my shit on the radio all the time.
Right.
So they played our Dats on 88.9, and it was just like fire. You know, I was just so pumped. And then, so I was all in. I was all in but I was really excited for the Brick Records thing to happen and put some records out.
So they put out every, like, all your 12 inches and singles and the album, at, you know, they did all that. Brick was behind all that.
Yeah. So Brick put out our first 12 inch vinyl release in 1998 was All My Own Shit.
Yeah.
Which
I'm looking up your music right now,
which was a fire record that stemmed from it came off of a battle at Mr. Jason's apartment. Mr. Jason from Ponte de Ushers, and he's done some other stuff too. Mr. Jason had this crazy artsy apartment over by Assembly. It's probably like where Assembly Row is now. It was like a warehouse, and everybody would go there, and he would play beats. And dude, there was like an epic time at his house where it was myself, Esoteric, and the dude Cage, dude that like Eminem dissed or whatever. So it's me, SO, and Cage, Mr. Jason playing original beats, and we're all rapping to each other. Like, literally, I think the four of us in the room, and we're all spitting, and SO says some fire shit, and I'm like, yeah, that was fire. Like, you know, give him props. I said some shit. He's like, yeah. Cage doesn't fucking acknowledge Eo. He's a fucking dickhead. Like, It's the only time in life I ever seen the kid, and he's a fucking dweeb. So when Eminem dissed him like years later, I was like, I know why you dissed him. That dude's a dickhead. But yeah, so sorry, that was random. But
it's all good.
Back to that, right? So we're at Mr. Jason's house. He's having a big party. He throws this beat on. He had these three dudes that were like dweebs. That were like hogging the mic as soon as they got there. And somehow I was mangled. We were drinking 40s back then. And somehow I got the mic and I went on this thing and it was like, I'm on some something shit. On some something shit. And something shit. Like it just kept going. And like I kind of bodied all three of these dudes. One of them people know now. He's kind of like, I don't know what the fuck. But yeah, so the next day, like it was a classic moment in that house. And right. The next day I ended up writing the song on my own shit to the exact beat because it was just so easy. I was just kind of almost just putting back together some of the lines I was killing this kid with. His name is God Awful. I don't know if he calls himself something else now, but he's like, he has a following. He put a record out with Thurston Howell.
God forbid.
God forbid. Yes. Him. It was him.
Shout out God Forbid.
Yes.
It's such a funny concept.
You could ask him about that sometime, yeah. if you know him like that. Be like, Check killed you at Mr. Jason's house.
That it's such a funny concept
Two of his boys.
Oh, word?
Yeah, no, two, like the whole... three of them died. I was like the three stooges, like banging their heads together. It was fire.
Yeah. So on my own shit, and like, you know, then you put the other single out, Come On Dude, right? That came later? That after?
Yeah, that was two records after. So we did On My Own Shit, and then we did something else. I forget.
Looking at it right now.
I forget the second one.
Yeah. I can't, but it doesn't have the singles breaking down, but
yeah. But so we put out three different vinyls with Brick, and they also got us a deal overseas to sell three of our other songs that we didn't even put on the first vinyl, like our earlier stuff. Come On Dude, my sister said Come On Dude, but no, yeah. that was the third one. There was one in between. It was we had the police car, or maybe that was it.
Maybe Come On Dude was the police car one, I think.
Oh, so yeah, all right, so then we had the I don't know, dude, this shit's so long ago, it's crazy to me. Like it feels like another lifetime ago.
Yeah. Did Eddie produce a lot of the records?
He produced everything that we did. Every single thing we did.
So he was producing the records and rapping on them, and you were rapping on them.
Yeah.
And that was kind of how it worked.
So I was doing, yeah. And I was also, I was taking the role of manager and like I was, before you, I was doing our shows. Like I was promoting our shows. Like I was getting Bill's Bar, selling out Bill's Bar all the time. I was putting other rappers on. I would put other rappers on. Oh, there we go. My man BM Shirley said it. So Come On Dude was number two.
And Naturally
was the third one. Naturally's fire. But
yeah. I don't remember Naturally. I remember the other two.
Doing what comes naturally. That's just fire. But fuck, I forgot what I was saying.
You were saying how you were kind of like, you were doing all the business.
So I was doing all that. We had the website, which I would love to talk about.
I want to stop you right there because on the website, because when I started promoting shows, it was told to me that, they were told me like the schizophrenic message board is the most, you got to be on the schizophrenic message board. It's where you got to promote that.
It was social media before social media.
Yeah. People are like, it's ridiculous.
I was thinking about it earlier. We had over a million posts before we shut down. There was over a million posts. Yeah. We had literally thousands of users. Everybody that was in Boston hip hop was on that board. Yeah. From Clinton Sparks, G Spin to fucking Uno the Prophet. It was just Dart Adams. Dart Adams used to write the fucking 20 like the huge post that nobody would read. It was crazy. That's my boy too. Shout out to Dart.
I know. Shout out Dart. Shout out Dart.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was the birth of message boards and forums and stuff like that. You guys are kind of ahead of the out of the curb.
We were on it, bro. I mean, the only other one, which was actually before us, was Underground Hip Hop, but but that was like goofs, like on Underground Hip Hop, like nobody knew you. On our board, it was like you know, there were some people that nobody knew, but for the most part, like the people from our board would be at all the shows and link up. So like everybody knew each other. So there was you had to actually like kind of be real with it. Where on Underground Hip Hop, there was the original trolls were on there. Like
it got ugly on there. It got real ugly. It got ugly on all comments are crazy. But yeah, I mean, I when I started promoting shows, you guys were done with that. And I was using bostonrap.com.
Okay.
And Boston Rep the Bean. These were the forums at that time.
I remember those.
Yep. Those were the big tools at that point. But yeah, message boards and forums.
We kind of blew that up, man. It was cool. It was dope. And I forget what I was going to say. Yeah. So I was doing that shit too. And I was booking our shows. We were doing Bill's Bar. We were doing the Western Front. We were doing like all these little spots.
Sorry, my dog's going nuts. Hold on one second. Hey.
That's fine.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, so I was doing all that other shit, wearing too many hats, which also was a challenge too, you know. It also got draining.
Yeah.
It got really draining when you're like putting on the show and you're the, you know, one of the artists and this person wants to get paid and it's like, all right, bro, I'll take the L.
Yeah. Well, that's my life.
Yeah, I know you know how that goes. But imagine with all the stuff that you do and all the running around and comps and dealing with everybody and all that bullshit. And then on top of it, you got to jump on stage, you know?
Yeah, no. I wouldn't even host my shows. Yeah, I wouldn't even host my shows. In the beginning, I was hosting them. And even that was too much running around doing everything. And
paying the balls. And especially if you're trying to drink 30 beers like at the same time. It became too much, bro.
Yeah. So let's talk about like nine. So now like the Middle East kind of really takes off, right? At this point, like now you grow up as a kid, it gets converted into the nightclub from the bowling alley. And now it becomes the mecca of underground hip hop shows in New England. Yeah. That must have been pretty surreal.
It was dope. I was pumped about it because I didn't have to go far.
Right. You know? He was still living in.
We had to go. We used to travel up to like Maine a lot. And do college shows to get a check, but it was cool to not have to like get a hotel room, or you know.
And that era, like, let's just talk about that era. Like, really, it's the Boston hip hop scene that you guys were part of. I mean, that was really that was a big.
It was dope. It was fire, bro.
Yeah, tell me some of your most memorable experiences in that era. Some of the best shows. Let's talk about some of the best shows that you were part of or went to in that
the
era.
The funnest, like the biggest, like awe show for me personally was we opened up for Method Man at.
Oh, right.
At, actually, at do you do? Oh no, you didn't do it. The Palladium.
I've done shows at the Palladium.
I think it's a different one though. I think it was a different one. We did one in. I don't remember where it was. No, Songest Arena. My fault.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yes, Mike Moves is in here.
He
was doing Metro Concepts back then.
Yeah, I remember
We had the ill team, bro. Like, my whole squad, and we're all still tight. Like,
yep.
All of my dudes, that everybody played a different part. And we had my dude Hot Rod that used to video all our shows and kept all the tapes. And that's why I still don't have any of them. Right. Like, that was dope, you know. But besides that, like, we had a squad of people that, like, everybody rolled tight. It was pretty cool. Yes,
and Tyler
my brother Tyler's in here. We had the lanyards for the people that was on like part of the crew, so you knew that they was like official.
Well, I tell you, I grew up going to those shows.
Oh, I was supposed to tell you about.
No, well, yeah, we'll get back to it. But I grew up going to those shows and seeing you guys open up on almost every big Middle East show I went to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you, SO, Lift, Ack. All these guys were, it was like, you know, that was the opening squad, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
And you guys were always there. So, like, that was what I was curious. Like, what is your favorite? What was the best Middle East show you've been to or that you were part of?
I got one that I just thought of. I just thought of it. It's a good story, too.
What is it?
So, but Fuck, I just got distracted again. I can't read.
Best Middle East show. You're part of. Best Middle East show.
I know that. I just can't read the comments because it makes me like want to talk to my boys too. So my worst show ever, to go the opposite way.
That's fine.
I freestyled. I got in a open mic where I freestyled at the Rat. And I was the only white dude. I'm talking, this was probably 95, 96. And yeah. After the show, somebody caught me outside and punched me in my face, it was like a pipe or a roll of quarters or something. It broke my nose and my shit's still fucked up like to this day. And I still like, I probably snore because of it. And dude tried to pop my chain, but he didn't get the chain after. But yeah, so that was the worst show. That was my worst memory was like really killing it at the Rat. And then my favorite funny one, what the fuck are they called? Smith and Wesson, the Coco yep. Brothers, right? Yep. Coco Brothers come into Cambridge, and they ask one of my boys to get him some like some fire weed. So yep. And he might be in this chat actually. And so I'm like, you know, wait, no, it didn't go that way. It went the opposite way. I ended up going through one of my boys in the chat to get it for them dudes. So somebody else reached out. Either way, so I'm performing that night, and I end up, you know, coming to meet these dudes in Central to bring them like a fucking quarter. But like I got them like gas, and this was back when like dudes only had like Kind Bud, and yeah. I got them like some crazy exotic shit, and I was proud of it. Like I wanted to hand deliver my, I could have given it to my boy and had him give it, but I was like, nah, I'm gonna hand deliver it to these dudes. Yeah, yeah. They had this little fucking shit box. I get in the whip with them, and dude's like, I give him the thing, and I only hit him for like $100. I think I might have paid $110 for it. Like I might have took a L. Like I was like, yeah. really like excited to hit these dudes, and and the dude goes, he goes, yo. You sure this is a whole seven? And I'm like, dude, are you fucking kidding me? And he goes, and he tells the other one, it was the dude with the tattoo on his face now,
Tech.
I think.
Tech.
Yeah, and he tells the other one, he's like, we got to start bringing the scale on the road. I'm like, fuck, you're talking about a quarter ounce, you fucking dickhead. So so we end up, I was like, whatever, dude. They didn't even know that I was open. They didn't even know who I was. Right? So at the time they had the song with the Super Mario beat,
Super Brooklyn.
So yes. So they're backstage. We see them backstage. I'm like, yeah, I met y'all earlier. I hope y'all enjoyed that gas. Right. They're like, oh yeah, yeah. You was right. My fault about that. You know, my fault about questioning it. Right. Like, all right. Well, I'm about to go rock. What's our first song on our set? You're not gonna guess it. I dropped that fucking I dropped their fucking beat, the doo 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 doo, and we rocked this shit because that was exactly what the car was there for. So we rocked over their beat like that. Everybody was anticipating him, like fuck them dudes, man.
So yeah, say that's a no-no. That's a no-no right there. Well, you were like,
I didn't care. That was my place, man. That's the Middle East.
That's so funny, man.
So yeah, so that was fun. That was one of my favorites, especially because they were heated. I know they were heated because that record was brand new.
Yeah.
But we always used to do that too. At all of our shows, everything was available. Like, we would literally walk into the club without even a DJ. Like we would have, if 7L and SO were performing that night, or I think Braun was in here earlier too. Like any of them, Frank White, G, fucking Clinton, Roy Barboza, any one of them that was there, we would walk in with a bag of instrumentals and be like, yo, you rock it. Like,
right.
You want to talk about organic shows? Every single performance we ever did, the only time I ever had a set list was the show that you put on for me in the Rest in Peace show for Bones.
Yep.
That was the only time I've ever had a set list. Like, we would show up without it. I mean, not needing a DJ, not like, yo, who could DJ? But we already knew all these dudes were going to be there. Like if somebody else was on our set, like on the set on the lineup, like yo, put our set together for us, rock out. Like, we always did that. That was the only time that I was like, yo, the first fucking record. I don't remember who it was. I was like, yo, the first record, let's do that. I see Bron. Bron will tell you.
Yeah.
Dude, we literally would be like, yo, here, grab these records. They'd probably look at them like, oh, fuck, what do you want me to do with this one? Like,
right.
But it was dope. Like, it was just organic.
That was a great era. Did you, was there a time after, like, when that era was over? Did you
say, I was done?
Did you just quit rapping after that? Were you like, I'm done? Or was it just like, I just fall back? Because you kind of disappeared for a while. You guys, I know that, you know, then Eddie Bones got into the accident, right? He, talk about the accident. What exactly happened?
Bones did something that every boy that's ever had access to a pool has probably done, which is, except for the first part, he was drunk. Besides that part, he was at a friend's pool, and it was late night, and it's dark out, and he dove in the pool head first, but he dove in the shallow end. A lot of us have dove in a pool, and you hit the bottom and you push yourself off. He did that, but he had hit his head, and when he tried to push off, his arms didn't work, and he floated to the top. And I mean, yeah, he broke his neck,
paralyzed, right?
And was paralyzed from the chest down.
Fuck.
Which was horrible. And that was I want to say that was around like 08, but we stopped. So we put our actual album out in 2002.
Yep.
And the last record from that point on that I did was in 04. And right. At the time we were already working on a bunch. I still got a bunch of skits, like fire skit songs that we never put out. And once he hurt himself, I didn't want to do it without him, you know?
Right.
Because it was like our energy. The reason why we were able to do them the shows that way and rock like that wasn't, yo, you know, your parts and just, you know, we had like genuine organic fire energy that everything from, I mean, we're also in that era of smoking cigarettes on stage and drinking beers on stage and fuck everybody. Yeah. Dude, I found we have so little stuff on YouTube because we were right before the YouTube era really started popping. Yep. But dude, I saw a show that we did in Rhode Island where we were like trying to get some back and forth with the crowd and they wasn't feeling it. And Bones literally tapped me and was like, yo, fuck this. And with a cigarette. And I was like, you know what? Yeah, fuck y'all. And like I did like, then I stopped like everything and did like the most vulgar acapella ever. And then spun and we walked off and grabbed our nuts. And like the crowd still was like at the end, like, but like we were just on the same page with everything. And when his injury happened, I was all set. But even prior to that, 2004, the last record that I had done was with Big Daddy Kane. Mm-hmm. And I got, in the craziest way ever, I got an opportunity to do a song with the person that was my idol that like inspired me to rap.
Right.
And once I did that, I don't know if you heard that record, but I kind of did pretty good on it. after that, it was just like, I just felt like this is it, you know, like I performed on stage with Kane at Boston at the Roxy, like me and my daughter, that's another thing. My daughter was born in 04. That made me want to fall back too, because the shit I was talking back then was just shit I did not want her to ever hear. You know, even now, I don't even want her to hear my old songs, like the old early shit. It was nice, but there was every now and then there'd be a lot of bad words on there, not just curse words, just shit that you can't even say now. Like,
yep.
It's crazy, bro. I had a song called Chasing Amy. You ever heard that?
No, I don't remember that one.
Dude, I had a song called Chasing Amy that was about it was like the movie Chasing Amy.
Yeah, I remember the movie.
You see that? Yeah, made by a fellow Cambridge dude. Like that shit. Like you can't.
Was that Kevin Smith? Kevin Smith made that, didn't he?
No, that was Ben Affleck.
Thinking something else. Oh, Ben Affleck. He was in it. I don't know if he directed.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know who made it. But yeah, that song was about a lesbian relationship. But my song, I mean, the movie was about trying to convert a lesbian to be like straight or something like that. But my song was about a real life story that was a lesbian that I knew that was being abused, was in an abusive relationship. And I was like trying to like help her get out of it, but also being a creep about it. But you know, that song was about abuse, but people would hear it now and all they would hear is like me saying the word like dyke and shit. Like,
yeah,
like you can't do none of that.
Different times now, different times.
Right. So that, like, I don't know, having the daughter, seeing Kane like do a song with somebody like me, it was just a bad look, like, for me. I'm like, dude, this dude do a song with me, like, shit must be bad, you know? Like, I never wanted to be that dude that was like, you know, I don't know. But yeah, so that kind of turned me off to
be. Yeah, because you definitely took a break. You took a hiatus, because I remember this. And then, Eddie ends up passing away, unfortunately. A few years after the accident. He went a few years, but he ended up passing away eventually. And we threw the benefit show, and I felt like that's kind of where you kind of came back a little bit.
Yeah,
you know, you did the record with Slain. I remember you doing a record with Slain, and it was
like five records with Slain.
Yeah, five records.
Crazy. People don't even realize it because. Yeah. Only one was the one that, like, that one was fire that we, the video was on MTV and shit.
Right.
But me and Slain got, I talk to Slain once a week at least.
Cool.
Every, like in person. Like, I see Slain all the time. But, yeah, like, dudes like that inspire me now, and even from 2012 to now, inspire me to make music. But also, I kind of enjoy just doing it vicariously through them, you know? Like, I'll put a fire verse on like my people's records if it's gonna, you know, make the record better. But I don't know, it's something, and that's another thing that happened too. I was doing a lot of like grown up versions of my young hustler self, if that makes sense.
Yep. No, it does.
Around those years that I stopped making music, and the reason why was because. The reason why it made me not want to make music was because there were dudes that were working for me, literally, that were like basically rapping about what I was doing, but I wasn't rapping about it because I didn't want to indict myself. And it was just such a turnoff. And it was just like, dude, I got these dudes that owe me money that are rapping like they're big bosses. Here I am trying to stay low. And it was just, I was just going to get in my own way. Like, do I try to overcompensate and try to prove myself, which is crazy about like music now where kids are like throwing everything in the videos and going to jail forever. And it's like, you know what? I'd rather not do any of that. I'd rather, you know, live a life that I want to live and just try to get away from the accolades and not need confirmation from rap fans for me being cool.
Right. When did you become a barber in this whole period?
Dude, I was cutting hair back in 1992.
Ah, so you were a barber on as well.
The whole time.
The whole time, okay.
The whole time, forever. Like I said earlier, when I had the conversation with Esso, he was at my house getting his haircut. And he was like, yo, you should do the thing. You know what? They filmed us on for Channel 5 for Chronicle. Remember that show? I don't know. Oh, it might still exist. The news show Chronicle filmed at my apartment. They filmed me cutting Esso's hair.
Wow.
And I remember saying on there, like, this is my underground barbershop. And then dudes on underground hip hop, like, oh, yeah, check if you're doing hairdressing. Like, dudes are fucking goofs. But yeah, I've always done it.
But you're not just like someone that does it on the side. You have a barbershop, and like, you work at a barbershop.
My boy owns a barbershop, my right hand man. And I frequently can be seen there sometimes.
I thought you did it more. That was like your full time thing. Is that
It was pre COVID.
Okay, yeah.
But, so the funny thing is that I've never and this is like real, and this is like not really the form to say because it might sound like weird, but I've never combined the two because I never wanted somebody to come in and sit in my chair and want to talk about my music. Mm-hmm. Like, dude, I have people that I've cut their hair for decades that don't even know I make music. Like, I don't talk about it in the shop, and I don't talk about the shop like in other situations because I don't want to. I mean, I hate the word fan. I don't want to cut fans, and I don't, you know, and I also don't want the people I do cut to think I'm pushing my music on them. So it's like, it's cool. It's just literally schizophrenic shit. Like, two totally different lives.
So you think your brain operates like that? Are you
1,000%?
You got the split personality thing.
I'm absolutely cooked. I'm not like the bad one that will do something that I don't remember. But actually, yeah. I do that too. But I even wrote on the internet this morning. I was like, I wonder which check's gonna show up.
Because I didn't see that,
dude. I got so many fucking stories that I can talk so much shit about so many people, and I don't want to diss anybody. So yeah, like, because especially in this day and age, then I gotta fucking it.
Yeah, because this is gonna get recorded. This is recorded, and it can be used.
Yeah, fake apologize. Well,
the one thing I want to talk about is like, you made this mixtape, or was it an album with the Machiavelli? What was it? The Checavalli? What was the name of that one?
Fire. That's fire.
Hold on. So what's the name?
It was called the Six Song Theory.
Yeah.
So Tupac had the 7 day theory, and this is how stupid I am, right?
Yeah.
I thought I had 7 songs done for it. It was gonna be the 7 song theory, and then like right when I was about to when I was finally ready to put it out, I realized I only had 6, and I wasn't gonna force an extra song. So I just said, fuck it. But
I remember when you talked to me about this before, you said you were in a real dark place when you put this together.
Yeah.
You were I'll let you say the details. You said you were under house arrest when you made it.
Yeah. So I spent a full year out of the last 10 in my house. Like a full year, two different stints of 6 months. Of just sitting in the house, and that's a shitty fucking feeling, bro. Like that's a shitty feeling. And during the first one, I went through a divorce at the same time. I caught, I think it was like two or three different cases in the same year. It was 2010. That's another thing that made me not want to make music because I didn't.
Right.
I want my music to always be genuine and honest, and it always is, but. Some of it's shit you don't want to really brag about, you know? Like when bad things happen, you don't really want to, you know? People love that shit, though. Some people, like, eat off of that, you know, where something bad will happen and they'll make a song about it and people love it.
I think if it's honest, it works.
Yeah.
But it's tough. So, it's also tough for you to be in a dark place and want to create, you know? Because that's a tough place to be.
Right. See, there's my lawyer right there talking about Hail Mary.
Yeah,
look up Hail Mary. So what?
I listened to it a little bit before we got together.
That shit makes me sick, bro. It's so real though. It's so real that it's cool. But so one of my boys, his partner's in here right now. My man Hags is in here right now. But his partner Rim came to my house and was like, because I was literally like not the house arrest where you could go out and like walk around and shit. I was on 24-hour house arrest because I had violated 2 different drug charges and I had a DUI all in the same year, and then on top of it I got raided by feds. So yep. I had a fed case pending and all this other stuff, and the judge was basically like, well, we can't send you right to jail, but we can keep you in the house and not let you go to work and not let you do anything. So I literally was in my house for 6 months straight. I was ordering Peapod. Shout out to my sister. Her email address is Peapod. But I was ordering Peapod. I was like literally sitting in my house. I also had a breathalyzer in the house at the same time. So I couldn't drink. I couldn't do shit. My wife left. All this stuff. So it was like, fuck. And my boy Rim came over and was like, "Yo, I'm gonna bring the mic over. I'm gonna bring this stuff over, and we can record." He was like, "I want to make a Tupac mixtape over all Tupac beats, and I'm gonna put it out on Tupac's birthday or some shit." And I was like, "Yeah, that sounds fire." I was like, "I'm down." I was like, "Give me the Ambitions of a Rider beat, and I'm gonna body it." And we did it. And I did it that night. I wrote it real fast, and I let out everything that.
Well, do we lost you? Do we lost you? Oh, you there?
Sorry, my phone was saying it was dying. Uh-oh. So,
you able to charge it?
I got another one. I got another phone. We can just switch to the other one. But so the dude recorded me doing that song, and it was dope. And then I was like, I hit him up the next day. I'm like, "Yo, let's do another one. And he just was never ready to do another one. So I kind of stole his project and just like did like a bunch of songs over Tupac beats.
Right.
So, yeah. So, and then I just sat on it because I didn't want nobody to hear it. Because I ended up, for a while, I thought the Fed case disappeared. So I was like, "Fuck, I don't even want to put this music out now." Because, you know, I thought I was going to jail. So I was like, I thought I was going to jail for a long time. And I was like, I was like, "Fuck it. I'm going to record this music. If nobody ever sees me again, we'll make all these songs about, like, you know, like real shit." And then I didn't end up going to jail. So I was like, "Fuck, what do I do with these songs?" I was like, "I'm not going to put them out because I don't want to, whatever." But then.
How much time were you facing?
I don't know. My lawyer's in here, but I don't know.
A lot.
So, a lot. So
medium,
so
small, like, medium, or large?
So every count was going to be like, could carry up to 2.5 years. And we had thousands of counts. It was white collar shit. And there were thousands of counts. So the Fed that had me sitting on the couch, in my living room in an ankle bracelet, told me, he was like, "Yeah, 2.5 years for every one count, and you got 10,000. I'm like, "Whatever, bro." Like, fuck it, dude. It was the worst. Oh, it was the worst shit, bro. It was the worst. So the funny thing about that is that they so that was 2011. They never came back. We never heard from them again, right?
So what? You're just off one day. You're just off house arrest, and the case is gone.
Yeah, no, the case never happened. It was just over my head. It was just, they raided, and there was like open ended supposedly, and they never charged me. But then we had
charge you, but you were on house arrest.
No, I was on house arrest for violating probation on the other shit when they came to the house.
Gotcha.
When they raided the house. And then
there's a couple things going on here. I get it.
When they raided the house, it set off a whole fucking thing with my probation officer saying, "Okay, well, you know, if you got all this other stuff going on, and you got this violation on this other case, and blah, 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 blah." So the worst thing is, they had a five-year statute of limitation to charge me. They came back 8 days before the statute was up, and that was in 2016. And they came with some bullshit charge that they ended up dismissing after the fact. And then they ended up dismissing the charge because the charge was bullshit. And the one thing they were able to prove, which was whatever, was that I never even paid taxes on that business. So I pled out to tax fraud. After all that shit. And even then, they wanted to fucking send me to jail for 1 million years.
That's how they got Capone.
That's what everybody always says. Guess what? And then right after I finished it all up and finished with all the shit that they did, I was like, "You know what? This music's dope. Let me throw this out. So that's it. Yeah.
When did you become a Freemason?
Dude, before they came in. Fucking...
All these different layers of your personality, you know, it's very interesting. So talk to me about being a Freemason.
Around the time that Bones passed, I was just, I wanted always in life, there was this common theme that I needed a male elder, and I wanted somebody that I could talk to, you know, like a grandfather or something like that. So I had learned about that organization that you know, it's good men, making good men better. And I was like, you know, I want to look into it, especially at that time. I had just come off the bracelet. I was living on eggshells. I lived on eggshells for 5 years, like knowing these dudes came to my house and never came back. Like, that's the worst, dude. Yeah. Like, I found out in like the winter of 15, I got a letter in the mail that was like, yo, there's a grand jury that's been meeting about you, and we're ready to, you know, blah, blah, blah. Have your lawyer contact us if you want to, like, be a part of this conversation. And I'm like, oh my God, they're coming back. But so in 2012, while I was like nervous about all that shit, I sought out this group and I found my niche. There were like all these like good, successful men that didn't have to do the shit that I did, you know, as a kid. Like, it all goes back to my upbringing, where, you know, taking the quick opportunity as opposed to, you know, taking the long road and doing the right thing. And they say the character is what you do when nobody's watching. Right. I always had good character, you know? So for me to get caught up in stupid shit just didn't add up. And it took me being around some people that didn't know who the fuck I was and didn't care that I could rap or didn't care about none of that shit. I'd have to impress none of them. They just appreciated me. I've always been a brother. I've been a big brother to both my sisters. You know, I needed a big brother myself. So I ended up joining this organization and I put everything into it because I had just lost my wife and, you know, I'd lost my partner, my music. I'd lost my daughter's in here now. Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah.
So I find this group and I've always been a leader and I've always been able to shine at anything I do. And I just put everything into that. So after a year and a half in the organization, they came to me, they elected me to run it. So I was elected the master of Joseph Webb Lodge in downtown Boston in the Grand Lodge building of Massachusetts. Like a huge, huge thing. Like,
is that on Tremont Street?
Yeah, right there in the corner, yeah, right. Tremont.
Where 889 was, right?
Yes, next to 89. Right, that's, yeah, the funniest thing. Like, I'd be able to tell, like, yo, dude, I took a piss on the wall right downstairs back in the day, coming out after performing, yeah, on the radio, you know, yeah, right downstairs. But so I put everything into that, and it helped change my outlook. It made me slow down, you know. It made me not try to go so nuts for everything, and I saw good things happening. So I saw results, and it's not what everybody thinks with the whole like Illuminati shit. That shit's not even like it's not that at all. I believe that it's when you're doing right and you're doing things for the right reason, positive doors open up for you and things go better, you know? And
absolutely.
And that's what happened. So fast forward to 2016 when they came back to my house. At that time, I was elected for the second time to run this fucking group of men. I'm talking 160 guys, lawyers, doctors, like financial executives, like all these people got me check, like got hair in my, like hair splinters in my hand, but in there with a gavel, like running meetings. And like, you know, they elected me to be master again. And I was like, really, really, I found something that I was really enjoying. And like, you know, everybody was having a good time. And then out of nowhere, them people came back to my house and it was like, boom, none of it mattered. So the one good thing I can say is I stood up before that judge. I think it was 2017. And at my sentencing, and the prosecution had wanted to give me 18 to 24 months for tax fraud. And they gave me the opportunity to say my side of it. And I spoke real, you know, and I said what I felt and about the whole situation. And the judge, the same judge that smoked them, the people on the college, you know, the college scandal where the people, the actors and actresses were getting their kids, yep, into college, yep, the same judge that smoked all them actresses. When I finished speaking, I stood up and I spoke. When I finished that, she said, I can't send this man to jail. She said the person standing before me is not, right now is not the same person that y'all went to his house in 2011. Right. You know, she was like, if you brought him before me back then, it would be different. She apologized to the prosecution. My lawyer, Aunt Becky, stupid. But yeah, dude, look at that. My sister, she was so compassionate. All the people, like some of the people in here were at my.
Yeah, they've been with you. They've been with you.
But they were literally in the courtroom with me. I thought I wasn't leaving that day. And she was like, I can't send this dude to jail. But wow. That's a thing where the Freemasonry really helped me slow down and focus on what really mattered in my life.
Right.
You know? So
kind of centered you.
Yeah.
Grounded you.
Yeah. Yeah. And it made me notice what mattered. And that's why, like, a lot of stupid shit, it doesn't matter to me, you know, like going out and doing all that shit and trying to impress people, like, which is the total opposite of like, of being a rapper, you know?
Right.
And I still, yes. You see that?
Your lawyer.
My lawyer said I had a lot of support that day. The judge read our memo, meaning the one that he wrote. He wrote the illest shit. He wrote the illest like bio in my story. Ben, we need to publish that. We need to publish that. Like,
lawyers are lifesavers.
He is literally.
My lawyer saved my ass too. I should have got locked up too. I should have been.
Yeah. I mean, it is what it is, but.
Yeah, that's powerful. That's powerful, so, Chuck.
But that whole thing was like the total opposite of the whole rap goofy shit that I got fire, bro. I've been talking. So my boy DC that produced all the songs on Beat Amata.
DC the MIDI alien, for people DC that don't know. Alien. Beast out of New Hampshire. One of the best out beast. Here.
Dude, a beast. And we're working. Like, I really got to say, we are... We're working on part two already. Like,
yeah. So I just want to stop you right here and just say, so the new project, the Vita Mata part one, which is the autobiography of Chuck Mark. That was the latest project you just put out in last year, correct? That was last year.
Yeah.
And let's talk about that. In the name alone, Vita Mata, that crazy life in Italian, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So it's kind of funny after everything you've talked about, this is kind of like it's kind of caps everything, you know what I mean?
So, but this is also why part two and part three haven't even been close to coming out, because, and that's a challenge. It's kind of a weird spot that I put myself in to do my own life story on record.
Right.
When I'm still living it and I'm still going through like crazy shit. Like I can't, crazy life, it ends with fucking whatever the last song was on there.
Right.
Like I got so much, all this stuff that we're talking about, none of that shit's even on there yet. Like I got a lot of stuff to, you know, to really tell the whole story. That's why I decided to break it up into three parts, because originally it was going to be this one piece, and it's like, dude, you know how long it's going to take? And long, because the song we did the video for, that song was from, I think I recorded that shit in like 2009, like the one with the Journey sample, Thanks for Life.
That was a powerful record. Yeah. And that song was about kind of your letter to your father.
Yes.
You know, you were, you know, I remember you talking to me, you know, obviously your dad wasn't around, but you kind of, you made that song, but then you kind of came to peace with it later, right?
Yeah. Cause I'm cool. Like I wrote it more, I wrote it about my daughter. That song was the result of me watching my daughter shine and feeling bad for my father for not ever getting to see me shine. Right. That's why in the song, like, I'm not even mad. I'm just like kind of saying it. And that song wrote itself. I literally sat down. I probably wrote that song in 45 minutes. And I'm not one of the dudes. Like, I don't take forever to write, but you hear these young kids now like, we did four records. Get the fuck out of here. Four records in a night. Them records suck. You know, like, it's easy when your songs suck. Like, fuck out of here. But yeah, that song wrote itself. But my thing just told me I'm at 10%, but it's fine. We get
all right. Well,
the phone. So
go ahead.
So that's why I decided to chop it up, because I can't start the album with Thanks for Life and end it with Thanks for Letting Me Be Free to the Judge. Like, that's, there's still more. There's still records that There's still records that have to be made about my daughter. There's still records about my divorce. So I ended up remarrying my wife that I divorced from. Like we're better than ever. Like we divorced in 12. We remarried in 15. Like after the whole, when I tell you that masonry shit changed my life and changed like a lot of shit, the man that I was, that was that rapper checkmark dude, had to be gone for this, for my wife, for my baby to come back. And now we're back and we're better than ever. But
and you so, just had a kid recently too, right?
Yeah, we had Sonny's he's gonna be 2 next month. But yeah, like Sonny needs a song, Monkey needs a song, like my mom needs a song, Bones needs a song, like. And then I still got to do a song. I still, like, there's still songs that got to come out. Like, I got to talk about the rap shit, like, these suckers, for lack of better words. Like, there's still so much in my story that's still got to come out, you know?
Yeah, and I think, you know, it was good to see this one come out because it felt like you're back to it, you know what I mean? And,
yeah.
You know, and I, someone with your talent and your personality, like, I just feel like you got to keep making music.
Thank you.
It doesn't have, you know, and you do it the way you do it with no expectation. Mm-hmm. That's a good mindset. You know what I mean? Like,
simple.
You
put it out. It.
You put it out because it's your art and that's what it is.
Yeah. And that's what it was from the beginning.
I still think you got a lot in you that needs to be heard. And I hope that you keep putting that out there.
Wait till you hear the song with my little sister.
I'm all about it.
It's going to be in your email after we get off the phone.
Oh, yeah. Are you actually rapping on that, too?
Yeah. Oh, dude, okay. I'm not just going to ask you.
I thought it was just like your little sister's song.
It's me and her, dude. It's fire. So the funny thing is she sent it to me. She sent me the record because she's been rapping for years. And she does the Bridgeside Cypher. And She's been at it for years, and she sent me a record and was like 2-3 years ago. It was like, she's like, I want you to rap on this, and I'm like, dude, I am not fucking. I didn't tell her that she's in here so she can hear it now. I'm like, dude, I am not doing a song with my sister, like, not right now. You know, I was going through all that stuff, and I'm like, it's just too much. Like, I don't even know how I want to represent myself anymore. Like as a rapper with everything I had going on. And like she took it easy on me. She didn't like hound me about it. And like a year passes and I'm like, don't worry, I still got you. And I just it was the most stress I ever had. Like even the song with doing a song with Kane didn't like stress me as much as doing a song with my baby sister.
What's your sister's rap name?
Just Jill.
Just Jill. All right, cool.
Yeah, and her name is Jillian. And and I finally did it this past summer, and it was fire. Like, we had such a great time, and we did the song, and we cried, and it was just like, I'm so proud of her, you know, like doing it all on her own, you know, without even saying, oh, here she goes. She's like, I wouldn't let her put her EP out until we did a check. Yeah, I held her back, bro.
Oh,
but yeah, like
not anymore.
Like, it was just not anymore. So we did the song, and it was just so real to me, and it was like coming full circle from the little kid that the baby that was watching me rap to finally be able to, you know, give her a record. It was dope. Yeah. So then her birthday came because I took forever to do the record. Her birthday's in December. Her birthday came up last year, and I was like, you know what? As a gift for her birthday gift, I paid my man Sev Uno, yep. dope director. Yep.
Great director.
I paid him to do the video for us. So video for the record. And then we were supposed to do it in December, and the snow was just so nasty, and I didn't want dirty visuals. Like, I didn't want like every time that we were supposed to film, there were like snow banks in the square, and it was just like dirty snow. And I'm like, you know what, let's wait. So we did it last week. So
that's
last
great.
Wednesday. And the video is already done. It's already edited. It's already good to go. And hopefully, with the help of one of my friends and a couple of my friends, we're gonna release it this Friday. It's really fire. It's feel good. It's dope. The song itself is fire, but the visuals are really, really dope. It's like really bright colors and just smiling and shit that I think people need to, like, you know, everybody's so uptight right now, you know?
Yeah.
And tough and time. On edge. Yeah. And I think it'll be dope to put this video out. So we're going to be my sister.
All right. That's amazing. I look forward to watching it and helping out on the project. And we'll wrap this up. Check, man. Thank you for coming through,
man.
Your journey is amazing. And like I said, good things to come in the future. I still, you know, we still got so much music left in us. So, you know, let's keep it going. And
I appreciate what you're doing. Even through the pandemic, dude, you've been grinding it. Like not just for yourself. Like I see you putting out other people's stuff and promoting people that don't have an opportunity to even do it right now, you know?
Yeah.
And that's I know that'll come back tenfold too, you know?
Yeah, we'll see it with a lot's gonna change, so we'll see. That's one thing you're guaranteed, right? In this business, change and
Right. Right.
You know?
Well I look forward to seeing you again and
We will.
And getting on that Middle East stage again too.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope. Well, thank everybody for tuning in, and everybody came through in the chats. Tuned in to the Leeds Edutainment podcast with Mr. Checkmark of Schizophrenics, and
man,
we'll talk soon. I'll talk to you later.
Thank you, brother.
Peace.
See you.